Hi, I'm Tim Robertson, the publisher and owner of MyMac.com, and this is MyMac Mini Podcast number 7. It's going to be a full show, so let's get it kicked off right now with David Cohen.
Hello, this is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. This time on Fenestration, I'm going to talk about a new way of running Windows applications on Intel Macs. Of course, we have Bootcamp, which allows us to run Windows natively on an Intel Mac. Then there's Parallels, which allows you to run Windows within a window on the OS X desktop. However, recently a beta of a new product was released called Crossover Mac. And what this does is allows you to run Windows applications natively within the OS X interface. Now, this is not an emulator. It's not using virtualization either. What it's doing is translating Windows API calls directly in the OS X interface and running the application as if it was an OS X application. The software is based on a Linux application called Wine. Wine stands for Wine is not an emulator. And what Wine is a project to recreate the Windows API files in a cross-platform application that can be compiled for different operating systems. Notice that I said recreate there. The Windows APIs, the programming interface that Windows runs on, are obviously Microsoft copyright and are proprietary. Microsoft does not publish details about how many of these interfaces run, because they're owned by Microsoft. What the Wine project has done has recreated these APIs by reverse engineering the Microsoft ones. So they're from the ground rewrites of the Microsoft API, bugs and all. Now, the Wine project has been going for a long time and has achieved reasonable success in the Linux world. A version called Darwine for the Mac PowerPC operating system has also been in development for some time, but this has been a lot slower, principally because of the difficulty of translating not only the Windows API calls, but then translating the resulting code to the PowerPC platform from the x86 platform it was originally intended to run on. With the advent of the Intel Macs, development focus has shifted to getting the platform running on the Intel side, because obviously that is seen as being an easier problem to solve than having Wine running properly and under OS X in the PowerPC environment. That's a bit of a shame for PowerPC users. Anyway, Wine for x86 under OS X has been up and running for some time. What Codeweavers have done is they've taken this software, developed it a little bit further, and put a nice interface on the front of it. They've also made the action of installing Windows applications using Wine an awful lot easier. The key thing is that the APIs that have been developed for Wine need a fair bit of tweaking for different applications. Now, if you're an uber geek, I'm sure you can do this yourself by taking the applications, understanding what's going on, and tweaking the code yourself, but for the rest of us, we rely on somebody else having to do that for us. This is what Codeweavers have done. They have a compatibility list of applications they have tested against their code, and they have hooks in their installers that allows you to very simply install these applications into the Wine environment they've built. Now, being called Wine, what they do is they call the actual interfaces that you load these applications into bottles. The idea is you create a bottle for a particular suite of applications you want to be able to run in OS X, and then you install those applications. I downloaded the beta at the end of last week, and I spent the day today installing Microsoft Office into it. It's a very unusual experience to be able to stick a Microsoft Windows Office CD into your Mac, have the installer run up looking just the same as it does if you're installing it under Windows XP, and running through the standard Windows installation for the software. At the end of it, it generates a folder full of Windows icons on your desktop, and you just click on each one of those and the application takes care of everything, and before you know it, you have the Windows XP version of Office 2003 running in front of you on your OS X desktop. It's very surreal. Now, this is beta 1 of the product, so obviously there are a few quirks. It needs to see that your OS X installation CD before it'll run, because it needs to pull something out of the X11 developer environment to install. After installation, I ran up Microsoft Word, and it seemed to work fine, though it did seem to be a little bit slow, and I noticed that other applications on my Mac that were running at the same time also seemed to slow down, so memory usage might be a problem. The Mac I was running on was a MacBook with 2 GB, so I wasn't short of memory there. But it's early days yet, and as I say, it is still a beta. I was impressed, this software seems extremely promising, and the developer's website says that they believe they can run pretty much anything that can run under Windows XP, provided they do the upfront work to make sure it's supported. To show how good they are, they've installed application support in their beta, not only for Office and those sorts of things, but also for a couple of games. Half-Life and World of Warcraft, I noticed, seem to be on the list. Now, they claim that if they get this right, you'll be able to run these applications pretty much as fast as you would be able to run them under Bootcamp, which, if it turns out to be true, will be a major advantage over Parallels, where you lose about a third of the performance of the machine through the Parallels overhead. I'm going to be watching this one with keen interest, because it does seem like it might be quite a nice solution if the applications you want to run on your Intel Mac are supported. I'll be running it in Anger over the next couple of weeks for the applications that I use in the business environment. That's principally all of the components of the Microsoft Office 2003 suite, and also Lotus Notes, which I use as my mail client. I'll keep you informed in later podcasts as to how it's going. For those of you who are running Bootcamp, it might be worth mentioning to you that Apple recently updated the beta of Bootcamp to version 1.1. I haven't had a chance to look at it myself yet, but I understand from reports I've seen on the web that it offers an improved partitioning scheme, it's less restrictive, and improved driver support. So that might be something to be interesting for you. Something else for Bootcamp users that you may be interested in is there are reports going around the web that the latest beta of Microsoft Windows Vista will install on a Bootcamp machine. Obviously, you won't have any driver support, so you'll be reliant on whatever the Windows Vista beta provides for your Mac. But if you are interested in having a quick look at it, and you've got the time and the disk space, you might be interested in using Bootcamp to load up the Vista beta, if you can get hold of it. One final bit of news for those of you trying to get your nearest and dearest to buy Macs instead of PCs. If you're having difficulty getting them into an Apple store to actually show them the Macs, you might want to try your nearest Toys R Us. As mentioned on the main My Mac podcast a couple of weeks ago, Toys R Us here in the UK have been trialling with little Apple podiums within their PC environments. I had an opportunity to look at one of these the other day while I was shopping for my son, and I saw that they had MacBooks and iMacs, and also for some reason 20-inch cinema displays, as well as iPods on sale. It's certainly no Apple store. I had difficulty finding somebody who knew anything about Thomas the Tank Engine, let alone somebody who knew anything about the Apple stuff they were selling. But hey, if you want to get somebody looking at the Macs and you want to do a Trojan horse on them so they don't realise they're going to be showing them, Toys R Us might be one way of doing it. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Thank you very much, David. You know, Crossover Mac sounds very promising. I hope that the development goes ahead, and it's, you know, it would be great to be able to simply double-click a PC application and have it run natively, kind of, on the Mac OS. As such, something along those lines, I should say, I've been trying to play a little bit more with Bootcamp and Windows XP on my MacBook Pro. I mean, you know, I've got it installed on there. I might as well use it occasionally, but quite honestly, there's just not a lot of applications on the Windows side that I need, want, or I can't find the equivalent and usually easier to use software on the Mac. I mean, I'm not going to make any movies using the PC. I record these podcasts using GarageBand. I assemble them in GarageBand as well. All my pictures are in iPhoto. If I need to manipulate them, I can use iPhoto or I can use Adobe Photoshop. I do all my writing, a whole lot of my writing in Microsoft Word. Some of it I use BBEdit. So there's really not a lot of stuff on the Windows side, with the exception of games. As every Mac, at least long-term Mac user knows, gaming pretty much sucks on the Mac. I mean, you go into any store that sells any kind of software, and they're always going to have PC games. And it sucks, you know. It's like, man, I'd really like to be able to play that. For instance, I was at a big box reseller today. I'm not going to give the name. And I saw Grand Theft Auto Vice City for $10 for the PC. You know, I've got the game. I've got it on the PlayStation 2. The problem with that, though, is it's not convenient for me to play games on my PS2. I've got it actually hooked up through my computer. And it doesn't look the greatest on my second monitor. It looks horrible on my 23-inch cinema display. So occasionally I'll run games on the 19-inch Samsung display that I've got sitting to the right of my main screen, and that's what I run full-screen video games on. I've got the Nintendo GameCube, PlayStation 2, as I mentioned, as well as the original Xbox, all connected through my Mac, and I display it on the Samsung. And it doesn't look as good as, not even half as good as it does if I'm watching it on my HD TV. But I don't want all these game consoles, and I don't want all the wires hooked up through the TV anymore. I don't want it in the living room. I do have one game console in there. It's the Xbox 360, and I tell you what, you want to talk about some nice visuals. It looks great. But back to the Vice City Grand Theft Auto game. It's $10, and it's for the PC, and I thought, you know, this would be a good opportunity for me to have a program that I can try, and I can actually get back into playing the game occasionally. And I can run it under Windows, of course, on the MacBook Pro, so I bought it. It's $10. I also picked up a wireless controller. I thought, I'd rather a wireless controller than a wired controller. And then I installed it, and I played it a little bit tonight, right before I started this podcast, as a matter of fact. And the graphics look okay. I see that there's actually a update for Vice City that I can download, and it might fix a little bit of the glitches that I see in the graphics, but I'm not expecting a whole lot. It's a pretty old game. But it ran full screen, and it looked decent. I didn't do any changing the controller buttons. I didn't configure anything. I just played everything right out of the box. It worked, but yeah, I really need to go in and assign the buttons on the controller for what I want them to do. Obviously, I want them to match the same buttons. The controller itself is identical to a PS2 controller, or an Xbox 360, what have you. And I really need to get in there, and I need to assign the buttons so it matches what I'm used to when I'm playing Vice City on the PS2. So I'll keep you guys abreast and updated on how my PC gaming experience is going on the Mac. But in the meantime, let's get on with the show.
It's possible that the comments that I make concerning the iPod and the settings on it will not be exactly the same on your iPod, because not every iPod uses exactly the same iPod software from Apple. But just the same, you'll get the basic idea of what I mean in this edition of Nemo's Reviews You Can Use That Won't Make You Snooze on the MyMac.com mini podcast. And I believe this is podcast number 7, or mini podcast number 7. I beg your pardon. If I make a glaring error or omission, please send me the correction at nosnooze@gmail.com, and I will certainly clarify it as soon as I can. Many of you know that we have just completed phase 1 of a fairly extensive series of reviews of premium earphones, earbuds, headphones, call them whatever you want, on mymac.com on our feature side, on our left side, on our main homepage. And you can find copies of those reviews by looking at our archives. Anyway, that's beside the point. Obviously, most of you are using earphones or headphones or some sort of contraption that goes in or over your ear to listen to music and conversation and podcasts on your iPod. I've spent the last 7 or 8 months evaluating and reviewing premium earphones and headphones, and if you can't find those reviews, just go to mymac.com/Nemo and scroll down, and you will see them again on the left side on features, interspersed with the other articles I've written and reviews that I've done since Macworld 2006, meaning they'll all be in 2006. None of them were done in 2005. Many users of the iPod, I even would think most users of the iPod, do not realize that there are some terrific features that are included with the iPod that are, as I've said before, hidden in plain sight. Let's crank up my iPod here. And the very first thing from my main screen, I go to Extras. I click on Extras, and at the top of my Extras, there's an extra called the clock. And this is, you know, where you change your date and time and stuff like that. But the wonderful thing is you can actually have the iPod be your alarm clock and your sleep timer. Now, the alarm clock is pretty obvious. I go to alarm clock, and you just say if you want your alarm to be on or off and what time you want it to come on and what sound you want it to be. But for the sleep timer, which I've been using all summer while I was on vacation, once you turn that sleep timer on, you can have it be on at 15, 30, 60, 90, or 120 minutes. And if you have your iPod playing through a speaker system, for instance, it can lull you to sleep listening to whatever you want. And then when it reaches that particular time, even if it's in the middle of a song or in the middle of one of our brilliant mini podcasts, it will just stop. And that's it. And the great thing is, it works perfectly. Also on the main screen on my iPod is something called Settings, and I have been playing around with the EQ, which is the equalizer or tone control, until I found the one that is the best for me. Because most people don't even know this thing is here, or they set it at rock if they think they're going to be listening to rock music or classical. But in fact, I have been using two EQ settings more than any other. I've been using acoustic, even though I've been listening to lots of electric and classical music, instrumental music. I've been using acoustic when I want the mid section, the mid range, to get a good punch. And I've been using jazz when I want the overall sound to be clear and bright. I want you to play around with these EQ settings because you will notice that depending on which speakers you're using, or earphones or headphones, cheapo or premium or whatever, there makes a huge difference to the EQ of the tracks that you're on. And I want you to find one where you can set it and forget it. I've narrowed that down to two on the EQ, jazz and acoustic. A real simple setting is sound check. Now, a lot of people don't like this, but for me, when I listen in the car to the iPod, which is where I listen to it most of the time, and I can't really be fiddling with the controls, so I don't want to crash into somebody, I keep the sound check on. And what sound check on does is it evens out most of the time the volume on the song or the spoken track that's playing. I would give Apple overall, let's say a 4 out of 5, because they're not perfect, these different settings and extras. But they're pretty darn good. They work most of the time as advertised. And the best thing about it is, once you decide that, for example, in the car, it's going to sound best on acoustic. With your cheap earbuds, it's going to sound best on bass booster, whatever you're going to use. That way you know how it's going to sound and you know what to expect. And you really can improve or ruin the sound of your favorite tracks depending on which EQ you use. That's the biggie. Thank you so much for listening to our MyMac.com mini podcast and Nemo's reviews you can use that won't make you snooze. Signing off.
Thanks, John. This is a reminder, we are broadcasting live from the Apple Store in Grand Rapids, Michigan on September 23rd, not very far away. And we'd really, really appreciate it if as many as you that's in the area could come. That would be just fantastic. I mean, it's going to suck if it's me and Guy sitting there in Grand Rapids, Michigan with a whole bunch of goodies to give away and no one there knows who the hell we are or what the hell we're doing there. So, you know, I don't expect anyone to fly in from, you know, I don't expect to see David Cohen flying in from London to come to our podcast party at the Apple Store, nor do I expect anyone from, you know, even Ohio. But if you are somewhere in the West Michigan area, we'd really appreciate it if you come. You know, quite honestly, I don't really even know what the hell we're going to do there yet. It's one of those things. It's like, hey, this would be fun to do, and we get it all set up, and hey, it'd be cool to give away some free goodies. And so we contact a bunch of companies, and we get some really cool stuff, including the Microsoft swag, as Chad and I were talking about on our last podcast. But here's the problem. I haven't really given a lot of thought on what the hell I'm going to do while I'm there. Maybe show people how to do a podcast, explain it. I think it'd be kind of cool to interview some people. Hopefully there'll be somebody there that they've never bought an Apple product before. They came in for the first time, and maybe we can get them on the show and say, why would you want to do this? What made you come in? That sort of thing. You know, just have a good time. That's really what it's about. I'm trying not to take ourselves too seriously, but you know, that's not very difficult to do. I hardly ever take myself too seriously. The hell kind of fun would that be, right? This podcast obviously is going to be sponsored by Small Dog Electronics. Go to smalldog.com. If you need a new Mac, you need a new iPod, hey, maybe you even need just a new cable that runs from your iPod to your Macintosh, it's going to be a good place to check it out and buy one. They've got their own, it's called, let me think, the Pawcast up there. I keep wanting to say podcast. It's the Pawcast. Really good podcast. Ed does that with Don, the owner of Small Dog. It's fun to listen to, so you should definitely check them out. Let's see, what else do we got up? We've got Guy Searle's number 49 Dashboard Minute, and there's only one more after this. This is going to be, as he described, I haven't listened to it yet, and I'll listen to it after I drop it in here in GarageBand, and I'll listen to it back. But he said this is the screw-up show. In other words, it's going to be bloopers and that sort of thing. At least I assume that's what it's going to be. With Guy, you just never know, you know what I mean? So, if you guys could check out our sponsors, if you want to find any links to any of the products talked about here on the show, go to mymac.com, take a look at My Mac Mini Podcast number 7, the show notes, and you'll find everything you need right there. And let's listen to Guy's, and I'll be back, and then we're out of here.
You're listening to the Bashdoored Minute, right here on the MacMine Mini Cast Pod. Hi, everyone. Welcome again to the Dashboard Minute. This is show 49, and this one's going to be just a little bit different. The reason why this one's going to be a little bit different is that this is going to be the show where I highlight all the times that I screwed up. These are a lot of the outtakes from the various shows, and as you listen to it, one of the things that's really funny about it is that you'll hear the different audio qualities as I was testing my setup. So give it a listen, and I hope you enjoy it. Meet me again here next week for Dashboard Minute number 50, and that one will be the last one. Regular widgets next week. Enjoy! Hi, everyone, and welcome again to the Dashboard Minute. You can title the list by month and choose from a number of different currencies. Adding items. Unfortunately, there were some compatibility issues that, well, oh crap, hold on. The Amnesty widget browser, and it was created by Mesa Dynamics. It also allowed, Good day to all you Dashboard listeners. I'm Guy Searle, and I would like to welcome you once again to the Dashboard Minute. The countdown is on, and there will only be four more. Forty-two, which is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Oh, crap.
How about the ability to choose which speed you're online with? ISN. And I said four, didn't I? It's really only three. That's what I get for not doing my research and changing what it was that I'm trying to say. Duh.
Handy plus and minus button on top of the widget and can... God damn it, did I write this?
Also, if you don't have a broadband... The person that created this widget has an email address which is sobox@mac.com. That's S-O-B-K-S-O-B-O. I can't spell either. Anyway, all this widget does is give you the latest scores from around the various leagues as they happen. Hitting the More Scores button brings up various major league... Anyway, all this widget does is give you the latest scores... Clicking on any game takes you to the Spock... To the Spock? Spock! Spock, where are you? Try that. Still a good widget, and it's available from Apple's dashboard download site, along with many other... Along with... Well, I'm just doing really well today. Easy to use, and I guess if I had to find any criticism of the widget, it's that it doesn't allow you... Okay. Alright. No. It's fine. Thankfully, our friends across the pond in England have made a widget that will go through their entire for sale site library, and I'm going to have to start again because that was just not what I wrote, so I'm going to stop. When their task is done, they can stop at Ye Old Modest Muskrat Tavern for a quick flagon.
Next up is another pointer widget for a tech website that is very popular with the geek and not so geek.
Like a lot of people, I'm a big fan of the daily comic strips found in most newspapers. Unfortunately, my local paper doesn't carry many of the strips that I enjoy.
What this widget does is constantly scan for networks that have an 802.11b or g or even n airport wireless card or airport wireless network. Either one, you know, you can just go.
As I record this podcast, it's Labor Day here in the United States of America. I really wish this was a worldwide holiday. I really wish everybody could have at least one day off and get paid for it. So if your boss doesn't tell you, or your spouse doesn't tell you, or your parents doesn't tell you, maybe even your kids don't tell you, I just want you to know someone somewhere appreciates what you do and how hard you work at doing it. It's not always about recognition. It's not about a pat on the back. Sometimes it is just about money. But you should be rewarded for the hard work you do. Thank you for your hard work. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.